The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. Real excited for this show. I'm always excited when we've got a guest that joins us on the show. So Jim will be joining us momentarily. And then we, as promised last week, we've got a special guest, Kevin Sebesta from the Rock Retirement Club and also does some life/retirement coaching. And is very active in the retirement planning space. We'll call it that. Real interesting guy. We thought we'd bring him on and chat a little bit about kind of how he views retirement and some of the issues that retirees face and give us a little perspective that you might not hear typically on the show. Jim, I'm not sure how much. We probably want to keep the banter to a minimum. People don't want to hear us talk so much as they're probably looking forward to hearing from Kevin. So, Jim, is there anything that you want to get out of the way, any housekeeping before we bring Kevin in?
It's going to be easy for me to control the banter. It's you who usually goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I know. Although your life is far more interesting than mine because you're traveling here and there and going to Atlanta and Ohio and your apartment building got destroyed.
I will be leaving tomorrow. We're recording this on May 13th and May 14th I'll be flying to Atlanta. For my two-day ed slot, well, actually it's a day and a half now. They run it just a day and a half. But it used to be 2 days. Now it's a day and a half ed slot IRA training. So at some point between when I come back and when I go to the next one, we'll do our little test again. And Chris kind of enjoys that. And maybe we'll do, if there's enough things that made me go, at this one, Chris, we'll do another segment on that as well. But yeah, we're going to bring Kevin on. And if it runs long, folks, we'll bring him back next week as well. But Kevin's going to talk a bit about, I guess, retirement coaching and just share some of his information and structure, if you will. He's been retired for over a decade. And he spends a lot of his time helping people deal with retirement. So, Kevin, why don't you pop on? You know yourself better than anybody. Why don't you come on, introduce yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about your background and why you wanted to be on the show?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm not exactly sure why you put yourself at this risk, but we'll do the best we can sharing my random thoughts. That's all I ever share is random thoughts. I did have two things I wanted to say. First off is one, I'm not Kevin Lyles from the Rock Retirement Club. I'm Kevin number two in the Rock Retirement Club. So we should be clear. I don't want to cause him any trouble for what I say. Usually they call me the crazy Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin, was he really the first at the club and you came after? Because you've been there for a long time.
We joined at the same time, but he used a screen name and I used Kevin Life and Fire. And then he changed his name to Kevin Lyles and I stepped back because his brain power took up the full Kevin's name.
I see. Okay.
And so, and the second thing I wanted to say is, Most of my sessions at the Rock Retirement Club, I say, are for entertainment purposes only, which is perfect because you guys will add the educational side here, and I'll just share my random perspective thoughts that process in my brain for the past 11 to probably 20 years of this stuff.
Nice. Just to, you know, before we dive into it, because there's going to be some listeners who have no idea what the Rock Retirement Club is, and everybody was just chatting about the Rock Retirement Club. Why don't you share a little bit, either you or Chris, on the Rock Retirement Club so people will understand what that is. So in case it comes up in conversation today, people will know what this club is.
I'd like to do that because I think it's a very special thing. This is not at all an advertisement for the Rock Retirement Club. It's just a place where I learn from so many intelligent, intentional people that I talk about that a lot. Roger Whitney is the Retirement Answer Man podcast, and he's been doing that for well over 10 years. And along the way, he saw there were a lot of people do-it-yourselfers trying to get ready for retirement. So he thought it'd be a great place to have a paid membership. And the payment kind of filters out people from the Facebook free community who complain or add just random information, and build a safe private space where it's actually can be anonymous, where people can share ideas and share structure. And it started in 2018 with 38 people. And along the way, Roger took his professional planning process that he's used for, I think it's almost 30 years now, and made a master class so that people could join the club and create their own retirement plan of record using professional tools. So it allows do-it-yourselfers or people that have advisors and you want to double check what they're telling you to create a plan, structure on a professional planner, and interact with other people who have similar life situations or other perspectives to help you with the plan. It's one of, he calls it walk with others, wise others. Boy, I should know that. But it's really, and it's now over 1,500 people. Hundreds of people just join and listen in on the sessions, don't contribute a lot because they're trying to figure this out. It's not all money nerds. It was at first retirement geeks. But I have lots of experience with thousands of people through the club for the past 6 years, just trying to better their lives. And as Roger says, dream big.
Okay. Very good. So where can people go to find out more about it if they wanted to?
I don't, that's a great question. And since I'm not the salesperson or marketing person, I would say the Google knows. RockRetirementClub.com has it, and RockRetirementClub.com has the team listed so you can see who the coaches are. And we'll talk about, I believe, how I accidentally became a coach and how I naturally just ended up there. But so it's truly amazing people. So many people have different perspectives I've never thought of that makes my life better. And that's a wonderful place to be. Facebook doesn't make my life better with those groups usually.
Well, I wanted to chat a little bit about the Rock Retirement Club because you are a member, you're a coach there now, and you're a retiree. So you and I have met several times at the Rock Retirement Club when I was invited down there a few times to speak to the group. And you retired, what, like a decade ago, Kevin? And you never really faded into the background at all. So now you're trying to help people with their retirement. Why don't you just share a little bit with Chris and I and our listeners on that journey, if you will, and what sparked the shift from a early retiree to someone who is now a coach?
Yeah, it's somewhere I didn't plan on being in retirement. Never thought I would be a coach of anything. What happened was my dad started teaching me about money when I was 12 in 1982 and how to track the spending each month and just structures from that. And I tracked my spending in high school. So I kind of saved some money each allowance or each paycheck. And I was always a saver. and a spender with deferred gratification. And my father-in-law passed away in 2000, and I helped my mother-in-law with her retirement stuff, Social Security, Medicare, required minimum distributions, other IRA activities, taxes. So I was comfortable doing those things starting in 2000. 2004, my father passed away, so I helped my mom with all those same things. And I really got an understanding of two widows in retirement and how their life changed and how the financial stuff was complicated, but it was very structurable, where you could process through the requirements and those pieces. And so a few years, maybe 2005, right after my dad passed away, my mom said, "You should live your life. You've been saving for decades and just quit your job." And I said, "I can't do that. I'm 35. And so my wife and I made a plan to leave our careers in 2012. If you don't remember, it was supposed to be the Mayan apocalypse in December 2012. So I thought, let's just do it 6 months early on our anniversary, just in case the world ends as a joke. And she retired a year earlier. So she's been retired 14 years. I stayed at work 3 extra years because I had a great work from home job, which was flexible time. And that was 11 years ago. And I thought I knew it all at 40 and 43 when I actually retired. I'm 54 now. And we'll probably talk later about how crazy that was when I look back at retiring at 43, thinking there could be a 50-year retirement ahead of me.
Okay. Well, Chris, anything you want to ask Kevin before we
how did you stumble on Rock Retirement Club and then kind of evolve into coach? Did you just hear about it from Roger on his podcast or something? And how did that, I guess I've never heard how you came to be with them in the first place.
That's interesting. Yes. So one thing, and that's what I've learned as I've gone through retirement, which I'll share from myself, and I see a lot in others, is Roger was giving, and that's the reason I talked to you guys about being on your show, is to thank you for all the information you give to others, all the life-changing structure you have with your process, spending almost an entire quarter going over your process episode after episode, so the retirement geeks like me could take notes and process through our numbers and look at the example numbers. Roger did a lot of the same structure for his listeners. And when Roger created a club, he offered for people to join it and try it out, I thought that was interesting. And then I found out that it cost money, more money than a cheapskate would spend. I just thought, you know what? He's given so much to people that I want to support him in this endeavor, and joined it. And all of a sudden there was 37 other people around me who were super smart, way smarter than me on this, even with my decades of thinking about it. And that's how I ended up in the club, is just an original alpha testing member. And then twice a year, he opens it up with a structured enrollment window, so people can go through as a cohort group rather than just getting dumped. It's like having a introduction at college rather than just getting thrown onto campus. Everybody, every week in college, you have your introduction week. We do that for the RRC, and we bring people in. So that's all been built into the process. And how I became a coach was not to become a coach. I just saw Roger led meetings each week talking about topics with the club, and I saw Roger once at a conference, and I said, we really need to have member-to-member discussions, not you all the time. And Roger's, he didn't take that as a slight that we didn't want to hear from him. He said, here's the Zoom password, set up your meeting. So once a month, we had coffee with Kevin in the morning, and then it switched to cocktails with Kevin in the afternoon. And it's a session where the members can just get together, and I open it up and I say, does anybody have a thought or a question or a concern? And we talk about that between members. And that's what started me coaching on that is I did that and I wanted to learn more formally. So I got my chartered retirement planning counselor designation by taking the test, which is one third of the CFP, the last third of the CFP, just the good retirement stuff. And it became more formalized. Just, it's more of a leader. I'm more of a leader in the club and working together with people. So it just naturally happened that I was trying to help bring members together that I ended up being a coordinator.
Well, since you do that, since you bring people together, you had the coffee with Kevin. When I was at the Rock Retirement Club, there was you led a walk in the morning, and we would go walking in the morning. So we went walking with Kevin, not coffee with Kevin. But what do you see? So you've been doing this a while. You're a retirement coach now. What do you see that people bring to you? What do people need help with in retirement? I don't know if there's a top two, top three, top five, or is it emotional challenges? Is it financial challenges, physical challenges? What does someone need a retirement coach for? Is it to help find themselves again, give their life purpose and meaning? I'm just curious what, you don't have to give names certainly, and you can protect their anonymity, but what do people come to a retirement coach for?
Well, you know the answer. It's enough. Do I have enough? And will it last long enough? That's the number one thing that people I talk to and the discussions that I see is, do we have enough to get us till end of plan? We call it end of plan because it sounds much better than dying. It sounds like a happy, successful ending. But people always wonder, do they have enough? And early on in the club, let's just, and then through maybe the first 4 of 6 years, there were a lot of savers who joined the club. So people that had really saved, people that maybe were technology aware, people who knew what podcasts were, joined the club. And just in the past few years, there's been more normal people who've put some aside in their accounts. And so now they're trying to figure out if those accounts, usually qualified accounts, tax-deferred accounts, the always taxable accounts, are trying to figure that out. There's less concern, which is fascinating, about medical insurance, because there's multiple options now for many people in their state or federal programs. There's one that's interesting is, there's four. So this number three is the timing of if partners are together, the spouses or partners, who's going to retire when and how that timing works. And that's a concern because there's a lot of logistics there. And just so you know, the fourth one definitely is, how are people going to have schedules? What's their purpose? You know, what do they want to be if they want to reinvent themselves? So it's a lot of different perspectives, but it's all, the core is always, will this money thing work out?
So do you find, I know you listen to our podcast and you've met me several times. I think you've met, have you? And Chris, ever meet Chris? Did you ever meet Kevin physically?
No.
Nope.
Just over the phone.
Okay. So, do you find, because we do here in the office, even with what we do and how we espouse the fun number, still trying to get people to spend on fun? Do you find that that's an equal challenge as a coach? I mean, you're saying people are worried about running out of money. Do you find that people still feel uncomfortable, justifiably so, I understand, spending on total discretionary fun expenses?
Absolutely. In my perspective, generally, I love the word generally, if people have a fun number, which is the extra in their retirement account in their, let's say, their assets, their investable assets, as you would talk about, if they have enough assets that they have a fund number, that means they're a saver. And if you're a saver, you don't just become a spender. And if they have a big fund number, that means they were a big saver, which means they were a small spender, most likely. And that's a big deal. And it's a personality thing. It's an inherent thing. It's a muscle memory thing for savings. And the Rock Retirement Club, I had this, well, I say it's a great idea because that's me. But we had, there was an idea I shared that we should get it together for a weekend somewhere with the club members when there were 100 members. And 38 people met at Fort Worth, and we had what was called a roundup, where we rounded up the members. And we had these discussions. So we've had five of those roundups, one each year in Texas. It's part of the membership. And there, the past two or three years, there's been some sessions on breaking frugality and trying not to be super frugal now and forever, and to try to use your resources to give you some freedom. And it's a really big deal if you're a saver and that fund number is larger, if you're more, far more on the saving side of the teeter-totter, the whole future side and not the now side.
Yeah, that's completely in alignment with what we run into with retirees that have hired us to help them with some planning, is that the trained and dedicated savers do find it hard to switch to that spending mode. And we use some, you know, some techniques, if you will, to try to unlock that. One is clarity, trying to provide through planning some clarity so they can identify what we call their fund number, the truly discretionary part of their resources that could be spent kind of willy-nilly if they can bring themselves to do it. Another one, I'm pretty sure I stole this one from Jim. I've stolen a lot of things from Jim that I use as my own, but
stole my wallet too, folks.
Yeah. Reminding them that somebody's going to spend the money. Somebody's going to spend it. So it's not like it's going to be saved forever. Somebody's going to spend this money. It's the question of, who do you want it to be? Do you want it to be you, who worked so hard to build it, and now maybe you can benefit from it and enjoy it? Or do you want it to be the government who's going to take it via taxes? Or do you want it to be beneficiaries or a charity that's going to take it? It's okay that any of those, it's, if you choose any of those as your priority for who's going to spend the money, it's on you. You gathered these assets together. You should have a say in where they go. But I do find sometimes when I express it like that, they realize, you know, of all the people I want to spend this money, I kind of want me to be primary. And that can kind of loosen things up as well. But it certainly, not one comment can change a saver into a spender. I've found that the dedicated savers sometimes need reminding repetitively over time in order to get comfortable and loosen their grip on it a little bit more. Most of the time, I think they are going to end up not spending to their potential because it just goes against the grain of who they are.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I wanted to jump in. Sorry, Jim, you could just wait.
No, I've got
lots to say. I have two, you know, I have two thoughts on that, which I think are kind of funny. We've all heard the saying that I say to my friends, if you don't fly first class, your son-in-law will. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But my other one is, if you don't spend it, the hogs will, and the hogs are the heirs, the organizations, charities, and the government. And that sounds, it's not that bad, but I mean, someone's going to spend it, like you say, and I've given them an acronym for that.
The hogs.
Yeah, well, I like that hogs. Yeah, the heirs, organizations, and government. Similar to what we would say, I always tell people, when you retire, to stop looking at your assets as an asset and just call them deferred spending. And I challenge people, if you don't believe that it's deferred spending, I challenge anybody to take $1,000 of your deferred spending and give it to someone under one condition: you get to see what they do with it. And I guarantee you, the people are going to spend it. It's deferred spending, and it's trying to get that mindset to people to stop amassing the wealth, which they spent 20, 30, 40 years doing, and start consuming the wealth. So since you are retired, and you've been retired for over a decade, and you have been consuming your wealth, you and your wife have been consuming your wealth, what has surprised you the most over this past decade, besides essentially immersing your life into helping other people retire? Besides that, what surprised you the most about retirement?
Personally, for me, I never envisioned my retirement being part of social groups, whether it's the Rock Retirement Social Group, whether it's the financial independence community, which I'm sure we'll talk about financial independence and financial independence retire early community, or even my group of high-achieving friends. We now call ourselves the Slackers because we were high-achieving and we retired in our 50s. And now we're like almost like a mastermind on how to live our best lives. We were just together, eight of us, for 4 days here in San Diego. And we all pushed each other to do different things and create challenges and create travels. And so I never thought the piece that all these blog posts talk about and articles about social is a huge piece of retirement, and it can add or at least not subtract years from your life if you don't have social connections. I had no idea that would be such a giant piece of that. And the whole you're the average of the five people you surround yourself with is absolutely true, because I have 10 very close Slacker friends, and then I have hundreds of friends in the financial independence community, and then I have hundreds of people I interact with and even friends at the Rock Retirement Club. And to me, that came out of nowhere in retirement, being a 95% introvert. So we'd never know we're going to, and that happened 4 or 5 years into retirement. So my first 5 years was fantastic, but it was just me being me, like I always had, with my wife and me together. We don't have kids, so it was just us. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, became three social communities that I treasure like family.
That's interesting, because a lot of people fail to recognize the importance until they retire, but the importance of that social interaction. Our working life takes up the vast majority of our time and becomes a huge part of our social interaction. And when you remove that, and all of a sudden you have this social interaction void, and you're trying to fill it and have that sense of purpose and have that sense of meaning and that social interaction, and that can sometimes be hard for a lot of people to replicate. And a lot of people go back to work. I'm not necessarily saying people we work with, but from readings that I do and the time that I spend in this industry, I've been doing this 26 years. A lot of people go back to work, not because they have to, but because they want to. They need that social interaction. They can't find it other places. And by going back and doing something, yes, they get that sense of purpose and the sense of accomplishment, but they also get that social interaction. Do you find that, Chris, with perhaps professors or instructors who leave at CSU or anything in your realm of the world?
I don't know that I've seen so much return, but I definitely have seen multiple instances of people hanging on and continuing to work when they clearly do not need to for financial reasons. And it's become evident that it is the social and personal connections that they have with their coworkers, and maybe to a certain extent, the institution, that gives them the sense of purpose and the intellectual stimulation and things like that, the emotional connections that they have, and the thought of kind of, shrinking back that circle, if you will, to maybe just be your spouse and a couple of friends when you had a huge social circle, possibly at work, that can be pretty daunting for people. And so having a plan to either remain connected in some way to those you want to remain connected to or make new connections, which is kind of what Kevin was talking about. I, you know, personally kind of look forward to making new connections into areas or hobbies or things that I might want to do later on that I just simply don't have the time to do now. But the nice part about finding an activity in retirement, even if it's not work, is that if you do it right, you'll engage with other people that have the same interests, which is a perfect recipe for creating, you know, friends and people you like to be around. So I think that I don't know how you plan for that so much as make that a mission, because I think you will have to, as you know, just see how retirement goes. And hopefully you won't sit at home doing nothing, because you're not going to find anything new that way. Putting yourself out there, hopefully you'll stumble on some things that, like Kevin found, he just totally surprised him that he went into something that has turned out to be very rewarding. And I would wish that on for everyone in retirement, that they would find that mission, connection, whatever you might want to call it.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
You know, Jim, I was thinking you are a really good example of someone who's transitioning from one phase of full-time work, which is a significant issue for many people who have their own business. There's a number of people I've met throughout different groups that have their own business that want to transition into a less 150% activity mode in business and move to a next chapter of life. And you're doing that with your move and your thinking about balancing it while you're still running it and doing a future life adaptation with your current life. And by sharing that with the listeners that you do, really gives people a good understanding of the thought process, the experimentation. Lots of people in the RC decide to move to a different location in the future, get a second location. In the financial independence community, they travel a lot. So I think by you sharing real life experiences of still having the passion of your business and helping people live their better life or their best life they can in the future, just like you're trying to do, is what people don't really hear about. And I love that aspect of the whole Ohio adventure and looking for fertile ground. It seems to be the number one task under that.
Literally and figuratively, because I want my garden. But it's tough, though. I openly share a lot on the podcast. I think Chris and I are different in that way. He's more quiet. I'm a little crazy. But I also recognize, at least with me, I can't, this is going to be odd because I've spent the last 26 years helping people retire, and I intend to spend several more good years helping people retire. But I don't see myself retired. And when people say to me, I had one person say once to me, "Wow, you can't be a very good retirement planner." I was like, "Excuse me?" And then she said, it was a woman. And I think she was joking, but she might have had a degree of seriousness to her. She says, "Well, you're still working." And her implication was, if I was a good retirement planner, I should be retired. And I didn't have a retort to that. But what I say to people now when they ask me, when am I going to retire? I'll say to them, when are you going to walk away from your children? And they'll look at me and they'll say, what? I'm never going to walk away from my children. Of course, I have to assume they have children. And I go on to explain that I don't have a wife. I don't have a child. This business gives me purpose and direction. And I just can't walk away from that. But I don't want to do it forever. And I'm in this flux, if you will, even in my own life, where I know I'm not going to be 70, 75, 80, and still doing this to the degree that I do now. But at age 80, I can all but guarantee you I will somehow, way, shape, or form still be involved in this firm, assuming the people who take the firm over haven't either A, ran it into the ground, which if they do, I'll kill them, or passed it on or sold it to a bigger firm or merged or whatever the case may be. So I think for everyone, when I share about my trip to Ohio, what I'm trying to do with relocating and how I'm trying to look at it through the eyes of someone who'll be in their 70s and 80s, not somebody who's going to be in their 50s and 60s, all that stuff that I share with people is for a reason. After doing this for 26 years, I've heard the stories. I've seen the examples. I've seen people move and relocate back. I've seen people, quote unquote, retire and go back to work. I've seen people die less than a year after retiring. It's been all over the gamut that I've seen. I think the big takeaway, and Kevin, you're the retirement coach, not me. I'm the planner. I'm the strategizer. I'm the one who tries to sit there like a two-year-old and constantly question why, and come up with what I think is a fairly good way of projecting retirement. But I feel personally, there is no one definition of retirement. My vision of retirement may be the total opposite of what Chris's vision is for him and his wife, and total opposite of what you're doing. You left the workforce early. I could never see me leaving in my 40s or 50s, ever. I loved it too much, and I still love it now. But my approach is going to be approach to retirement is going to be different in the sense I am going to pull back, but I am going to remain involved. I guess where I'm trying to go with that, Kevin, Chris, and listeners, I don't think you can cookie cut retirement and say my retirement has to look like my neighbor's retirement, or it has to look like those silly advertisements you see with the clearly 65-ish, 70-year-old couple wearing white linen, walking on a beach where there's some palm trees and a hammock floating in the wind, and they're trying to imply that that is the successful retirement. It's going to be different for everyone. That's my take. Have you seen that as a member of a 1,500-person group? And a coach in that group, I don't think, like snowflakes, any two retirements are identical, are they?
Not even close. And even beyond that is the lead up to making that decision. Sometimes I call it graduating from your career, because retirements can be many different forms. Kevin Lyles is probably very busy in retirement with all his interests and helping and sharing and guiding throughout many communities. And the lead up is fascinating. Family structures are fascinating. One thing, and for the small business owners or even large business owners, I guess, you've built something, and the bigger you've built it, the more you want to make sure that it maintains its viability because of the success. And it's not an ego thing. It's like growing children and having successful children, I assume. People are, no matter what age, they will always talk about the successes of their children, who could be, like you mentioned, some children are 70 years old and their parents are 90s. But I think it's not just the retirement side, it's the leading up to it. And one thing I was thinking is, I say this a lot in the club, and everyone's probably tired of me hearing about this, but so many people say, when I retire, I will, and they have this vision of retirement, and they don't know when that graduating from their career is. But I always say, you know, well, you're working now. Are you enjoying your life? Are you loving your life? Are you working 10 hours a day plus commute Monday through Friday so that Saturday you can do chores and run errands, and then Sunday morning you relax, and then Sunday afternoon you start thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow morning on Monday? I mean, that's just a weekly circular grind that we go through for decades. And so I watched a movie called Playing with Fire, and the couple sat down separately and they made a list of their 10 favorite things that made their soul happy. Like if they had 20 minutes to themselves to do anything they want that made their soul happy, what would those be? Would it be cooking or singing or calling a friend or exercising or being outside or listening to music or dancing or whatever? And I always say, why don't you do one of those things on Tuesday night, just 20 minutes, something that makes your soul happy, rather than running to the grocery store on Tuesday night? You could maybe do that a different night and find some soul, deep soul happiness in your week and not just waiting when I retire. And I don't know if people do that, but you know, with smartphones, you could just put that in there and you can carry that around with you and you could look at your notes and see what makes you happy. And I'm sure Jim and Chris, both of you helping people look at their financial situation and their retirement vision and putting in a structure for them will give them the freedom to start looking at the other side about life living. And that's where the coaching piece seems to be an actual valid term. Like a life coach, I thought, oh, that's a fluffy thing. But a retirement coach it's very technical to allow you to have freedom. And so, of course, you don't want to leave something you've built. Roger Whitney loves what he does every day because he helps people. And it's not a job. It's more of a passion with a great return. So everybody's lead up and retirements are totally different.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned all that. And Chris, before I was going to bring up, because Kevin's mentioned it before, from Fritz Gilbert, the gentleman from the Retirement Manifesto, his 90-10 rule, which kind of ties into what you were just saying, Kevin. But was there anything you wanted to add, Chris, before Kevin jumps into that?
No, just my support for not waiting until retirement before you do some things, because if nothing else, it's a great way of preventing regret that you might have. That sometimes you wait and wait and wait and wait, and then for a variety of reasons, physically, financially, emotionally, you never actually get to do those things. And you doing it a little bit, at least during the career phase before you're officially retired, if you're going to take a traditional approach to one day working and the next day being retired, that I think that can be very rewarding and make that grind that Kevin was mentioning a lot more livable and enjoyable overall. So don't dismiss the current in this. Hopefully those who are dedicated savers don't do it to the degree that they're completely miserable during the saving years, because that's probably a good indicator that you're oversaving. Just throwing it out there, assuming that you're, you know, have enough financial success that you can be a saver. There's obviously, this podcast isn't aimed at those who are just struggling to make it by and are, you know, likely going to head into retirement with nothing saved. There's unfortunately a large portion of our population that's going to find themselves in that position and live on essentially Social Security and the support of their family and others. If you are one that's successful enough where you can save and do things, do it with a degree of balance, if you will. So I'll parrot what Kevin said, to pick an event or an activity or something a couple times a week that gives you joy.
And that ties in then, Kevin, because you've talked about the 90-10 rule, which, folks, it says that retirement success is 90% about life and only 10% about money. Now, whether or not those percentages are accurate or not is immaterial. The concept is that retirement is more about life than money. Money gets all the attention. Money gets all the headlines. It sparked the whole cottage industry of managing your money and all of that other stuff that I despise about my industry, but that's not the topic for today. But this 90-10 rule, Kevin, probably applies to nearly everybody or some percentage of that. As Chris rightly pointed out, there's just some people where they don't have that 10. They don't have that bit of money, and their retirement is 90% about money because they don't have enough. They have to try to make ends meet. But we're kind of addressing this to the typical listener of this podcast and others, where people who have saved, have produced and locked up some wealth, and now they do want to go into retirement. How do you address, as a coach, the concept of the 90-10 rule? Has it influenced you? Has it influenced the way you coach? Do you find it to be an accurate assessment?
For many, myself, my wife and I, many people I talk to, it's very accurate. Now, I'll say Fritz Gilbert and Kevin Lyles kind of bounced this around, and it was fascinating because they said for retirement geeks, before retirement, leading up to retirement, 90% of your planning is financial and 10% is life. And then a few years into retirement, you realize the money is kind of working out because you're a retirement geek and you were saving. And then it takes a little while, but then you figure out, wow, the money's pretty good. I'm only spending 10% of my time on that and 90% of time on my life and what I want to do and who I want to do that with and how I want to give back for many people. Fritz and Kevin and Mark Ross and Roger and so many people are giving back. And so we even have a doctor as a coach in the club, a retired doctor. So he's doing health and wellness motivations for in giving back. So from the community that's probably listening to this, anybody that's listening to designated beneficiary or RMDs or these listeners like me have saved. Otherwise, we wouldn't be worried about RMDs or big RMDs. And we found that, well, let's be clear. Luckily, when I retired at 2014, I had over a decade of great returns behind me. And so that mattered a big deal by saving through my late teens, 20s, 30s, into my 40s. So there was money in there to benefit from those returns. So that was my situation for returns in our lifestyle, which helped ease this structure. We saved enough to have a good retirement based off of projections and using Monte Carlo, which I hear people call the Money Carlo, which I think is kind of true. It's kind of like a money projection. And but now using different calculators and using my spreadsheet geek skills with the structure you shared in your process and figuring out what our food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare were, and the structure and set-asides, and my Slacker friends who did the same, and we get together and we talk about, well, is this how you structured the inflation for these different categories? Once we put that into place as the second version of our retirement plans, the first ones being different tools online, we'll say basic and then more advanced, we don't really worry about the money stuff. We right now, it's what, I don't even know, May 2025. Markets went crazy for the past couple months. Not real crazy, but really volatile. We don't even look at that because of a structure of having near-term money set aside in liquid funds. And in our case, well, I could say cash or treasuries, just or CDs, or some people have MIGAs. There's all kinds of products that have been talked about on different shows, just the, you know, the return of your money, not on your money concept. So we don't have to focus on the actual return of the money. And one other thing I just thought about was, I've learned this with my mom, my mother-in-law, and our accounts, selling assets to fill your positions, as you call them. Some people call them the three bucket strategy. Other people call them different models. I won't say them because they're confusing. Selling stuff is complicated. You have to decide, do I take a distribution? Do I sell something that's down maybe right now? Do I sell something that's up right now? Do I take long-term capital gains versus distribution as ordinary interest rate? That stuff is mind-boggling painful to try to super over-optimize. And part of having a structure allows you to just set up a structure and focus on living and funding stuff over 3 to 5 year term. And there's some pieces like that that we talk about a lot. And I see those people who've set up a plan to use their assets in the next 3 to 5 years is not really watching market stuff right now. But if you're an optimizer or a, quote, investor, end quote, you're trying to figure out how to make it as best as you can, as perfect, as optimized. You don't want to make a mistake. And those spreadsheet people might love that, and maybe that's their passion. So, but my wife and I, we've shifted to these are the structures, and we freely spend. We've created our own fund number. We've advanced that into a fund bucket. So we put a chunk of our fund number in our fund bucket for the rest of this decade, because we picked the roaring 20s as a decade to do a little more. And Mark Troutman and I, my friend, we've talked about that within different podcasts and different communities to show people it's not just some standardized structure or some consistent structure. It's about living and having the structure below you. So I don't know how to, I could go on for hours of how.
No, we probably will have to wrap up, but I think this is going to be a good segue in for next week's show because of a few things that you just said. I like how you kind of explained a bit about what you and your wife have done. I cringed when you said roaring 20s, because I hope these roaring 20s don't end like the last roaring 20s ended.
Upgraded that, though. We now, just so everybody knows, if we're going to leave a cliffhanger, there is the go-go years, the slow-go years, and the no-go years. So we've named the remainder of this decade the mojo years before our go-go, because we're young. So it's no longer the roaring 20s. It's now the mojo years.
Okay, you're changing the verbiage. Very good, because the last roaring 20s didn't end too well.
Ours didn't start too well either. 2 months, 3 months into it, everything shut down.
Exactly.
Well, what I would like to do, because we'll wrap up here, but I'd like you to share a bit, because you mentioned the market volatility. And you're retired, and you work with a lot of retirees in the club. I'd like to kind of pick up there and see if people were freaking out or not with this tariff tantrum. And again, granted, you can't draw many conclusions from the tariff tantrum because the market is fully recovered, depending on which market you're looking at, of course, but nearly fully recovered everything that was allegedly lost. But I want to know from your standpoint, what do you see other retirees, since you said there's 8 slackers, there's 1,500 people in the Rock Retirement Club. Let's pick up with how people frame their retirement with confidence. How do they do the 4% rule? Do they do guardrails? Do they do ceiling and floor? Do they do fund number? What do you find most people doing to try to give them the peace of mind? And remember, folks, just because Chris and I talk about our approach, which is we call it the secure retirement income process, but it's all predicated on my concept of discovering what your fund number is and encourage you to spend most of it during your go-go or mojo years now, as Kevin has said. But what do you find people doing? Because I know every member must do something slightly different. Let's kind of pick up on there. How do people frame their confidence in retirement? And what do you see retirees doing? I think that might be a good topic to pick up with next week.
Yeah, so that sounds good. So I'd like to talk about that next week, because I think the paycheck for yourself structure and the spending yourself, how that applies before, during, and after some of this recovery is really interesting. And I would love to talk about that and the plans that people do.
Because you must see different types of plans. And I don't think there's any right or wrong answer. There can be a difference of opinion. But any plan for your retirement, if it works for you, then it's a success for you. But you must be exposed merely because of the number of people you come in contact with, especially in the DIYer group. They must project their retirements differently. So let's kind of pick up with that.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. So everyone heard, you want to stay tuned for next week's show. this week's Q&A show, just so you all know, Jim will be traveling. So it'll be myself and Jake and Jacob, the two Jakes, if you will be joining me for a Q&A show this week. So don't know the questions we're going to cover yet. Jim's going to send those to us, but we'll have a show for you, even though Jim will be out. And then we'll pick back up with Kevin next week with the continuation of this short series we're going to do here. So
kind of sounds like a little rock band there, Chris and the Jakes.
Chris and the two Jakes.
Chris and the Jacobs.
Yeah. Chris maybe not and a the Jacobs. Maybe not from this era, but sounds like something from the 50s.
Oh, yeah, but Chris and the Jacobs. That'll be next week's Q&A show, Chris and the Jacobs. I like that. We're going to have to run with that. We have to get a meme, do they call it? You know, a little funny drawing of you and the two Jacobs. Chris and the Jacobs.
Yeah, we can get AI to do that for us.
Yeah, we can probably get AI to do it.
That's a good use of AI. There's some bad
use of AI. But is that what a meme is? Is that a meme is just a funny drawing, right?
Yeah, or even a video these days. They'll call it that.
Okay.
All right. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Kevin, and we'll talk to you again next week. So everyone else, stay safe, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.